welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Hey folks, welcome back to the show and allow me to be part of your week. Now, before we jump into the episode, I just want to do a little house cleaning here. First of all, I just want to say a big shout out to all of you who've been sharing the podcast, who've been sharing the different episodes and speaking to your people, to your tribe. Because for some reason, the last couple of weeks, the numbers have gone through the roof. And I was wondering, what's going on? So thank you for all that. And just another quick update that I have updated my website at www.mindtalk.no. That's M-I-N-D-T-A-L-K. I've included the podcast and all the episodes and refreshed the site. So I've tried to create a one-stop shop that has the publications, that has the podcast, that has my services and such. So if you are so inclined or curious, you can have a take a look there. But for now, let's jump into the introduction to this week's episode. Well, today I have the great honor of delving into the profound insights of a remarkable individual who has dedicated over 23 years of her life to supporting teams and individual performance in organizations around the world. With a unique perspective and a keen sense of direction, Sonia DiMalo leverages her expertise to drive teams and organizational performance, making a tangible and lasting impact on the lives of many she's worked with. Now, driven by her deep passion for creating more equal and just society, Sonia naturally cultivates community and fosters significant, scalable impact through meaningful relationships. She's an expert in leading and cultivating high-performance teams, creating a safe space for learning and growth, an inspiring and mindset reinvention that supports the anticipation, design, and implementation of long-term solutions. Today, I am thrilled to have Sonia, an award-winning author and facilitator, to join us. Now, her book, The Apple in the Orchard, a story about finding the courage to emerge, it was endorsed by a renowned thought leader, Ken Blanchard. Her book challenges the prevailing belief that life operates as separate entities. Through the captivating journey of Brave Apple, Sonia explores the power of purpose, the importance of accessing collective intelligence, and the transformative potential of fostering collaborations. In these complex times where sustainability and collective wisdom are paramount, the apple in the orchard, it invites us to question our perspectives and engage in meaningful conversations. It raises the fundamental inquiries about purpose-driven living, reflective practices, and the creation of organizations that contribute to the well-being of the entire community. So in today's episode, I want to explore the key messages of her book and delve deeper into their implications for personal growth, organizational dynamics, and the collective future we all aspire to shape. So now let's slip into the stream with my conversation with Sonia DiMalo.
Thank you, Jason. My name is Sonia DiMalo, and I live in Montreal, Canada. And I consider myself an avid learner of the world. And I love people. I love things. I like how people choose different paths for themselves. And so that has led me to a career in teaching, both corporate teaching and teaching in university, both in graduate and undergraduate studies. And it is my joy, really, to see people learn and transform and make their lives better.
So Sonia, what I'd like to do is that you were kind enough to send me a copy of your book, The Apple in the Orchard. I was wondering, maybe you could just give us a little synopsis of what that book is. And I think it's very important because it contributes to this message that we're trying to get out about well-being and resilience.
Absolutely. This is a book that I wrote in 2010. And interestingly, I wrote it on a flight home from Rome after finishing some work that I was doing there with an organization. And the book just, it was birthed, I might say, on that flight, even though it took me 2 years to complete it after that. And it's a short story. So the less words you have, the longer it takes to write them as each word is crafted and selected. And it is my purpose to write the book. And the hope is that the book itself and the short story that you find in the book helps you discover your purpose. And it invites the reader to understand that it's okay to be curious. It's okay to explore, to consider and be aware of your own well-being. But most importantly, your place in the world. So you are not an island. You are not isolated from the world. You are a part of it. You are connected to everything in this world of ours. And together, we can do some really amazing, great things if we are aware, if we're curious, if we look around, take small steps, learn and grow together. So it really is a story of hope.
Yes.
And I'm really honored to have had some beautiful endorsements by Ken Blanchard, where he invites the reader as well to take the leap and grow, and to be curious. Really,
your book challenges that sense of separateness and emphasizes the interconnectedness of how we are. The reason I want to bring in the brain is like the left hemisphere tends to be very, very detailed focused, very granular. It sees the difference between me and you, between the tree, the house, and the mountains. It has the ability to separate, to organize, and to categorize and prioritize. But the right side of the brain, again, it has the logical emotional centers, but it sees the connectedness of things. It sees the big pictures, we can call it the global perspective. This difference between separateness and the emphasis on the interconnectedness of sort of life and how we are. How did this understanding sort of shape your perspective on personal growth and leadership development?
Well, personally, it is a mission of mine to find community. And I think in my own personal and professional development throughout my life, you know, we are taught, I guess, that you are on your own. You need to figure things out. You need to take care of yourself and you need to make things work, right? You need to find a career, get a job. You know, these are independent things. And yes, there are people to help us, but it could feel like we are isolated in that journey. And the book is a reminder that we are not isolated. In nature, we are connected. And it is something that I think our society has removed from our consciousness, that we are indeed separate. And so the book is a reminder to reconnect to this natural ability that we have as human beings to connect energetically, but physically and socially with each other and all the things that are around us. We have this innate sense in us to connect. If you ever walk into a room, somehow you might be feeling things that you weren't feeling 10 seconds before you entered that room. These are the connections that we're feeling from the other people around us. And so I think that's what it is, in that we have to remember that we are a collective, that we do work together, and that indeed, I believe, there are more people out there that want to help each other than not. And if we do if we do put out our message, which I call purpose, if we put that out there really strongly, things will happen because the universe will conspire to make it happen. And we can help each other in that way. And I've met so many people where there's been just a little connection here and there, and then the whole world has changed for them. And so that's I think, the beauty of understanding that we are a collective. And if we put out our seed, just like in the book, if we put out our seed with intention, then we can discover things that we never even thought might be possible for us. And the world is just, there's so much curiosity and learning available to us. And so that's the thing. I believe in abundance, right? So with the abundance of every step, we can learn and grow together.
You know, I think one thing that the pandemic taught us is that what you're just saying, how important it is for us to connect with other human beings, to have those rich and dynamic relationships. And the pandemic, what that did to us, it made us tourists in our own lives. What we took for granted, when it was stripped from us, when we were isolated, home office, homeschool, what have you, then we actually started really appreciating what we had lost. And that interconnectedness, that sense of interdependence became, I think it hit home to all of us how important that is. And so I think, even though you wrote the book 10 years ago, I think it's timeless in its message. You know, it could have been something written today, post-pandemic, and it would even have even much more relevance because there's so many salient points. I was wondering, how can individuals cultivate a courage to embrace interconnectedness and sort of move away from the old narrative of competition and consumption, if I can characterize it that way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are engulfed in it, in this competition. And it is the thing that I say keeps us stuck. So Brave Apple, at the start of her journey, she's on her tree and she feels stuck. She's, you know, she's removed from the orchard. She's up on a hill. Mm. Her tree doesn't feel like it's really the place she needs to be. It's not a bad tree. It's doing its job. It's producing apples and it's, you know, happy. But she feels something more. She feels she has some potential. And she's been on this tree for a long time. And then suddenly she sees something in the orchard that she hadn't seen before. And so that's the spark, right? So the invitation here is, if you're feeling like you have more to do or more potential, or just feeling like, is this it? Like, is this the rest of my life? If you feel like you want something more, then the invitation is to just be curious, right? Is to be aware and to look really with full compassion for yourself and for others, and to see maybe what you hadn't seen before. This happens all the time. We don't see everything. So it's really about grounding yourself and rooting yourself in who you are and where you are. So Brave Apple saw this thing in the orchard and she became curious. And she thought about it for a while and then she popped free from her branch, rolled from her hill all the way to this, what she had seen as a glowing tree. And so when she got there, you might think, well, you know, that was not a smart move because, you know, the end is near, right? But she didn't think about it like that. She didn't regret what she had done. And so a lot of people ask me, you know, I love the story, but, you know, that decision to pop free from her branch, that's, I mean, it happened in an instance in the book, but really that is the question most of us have. Should I risk it? Should I go? Should I stay? I don't know. What's ahead of me? And so that uncertainty keeps us stuck, of course. Society keeps us stuck because we listen to all these, the voices around us. And most of the time, you know, especially can we call it post-pandemic? I'm not sure.
at least the lockdowns and close downs. I mean, the world's opened up, you know, so
that's
yeah.
Right.
In that case, let's call it that.
Let's call it that. In this world, you know, people are realizing, like you said, their eyes are open and they're seeing, you know, like, is the, you know, what is there for me? What can I do now? And you know, if it means that I need to push myself, I need to see things I hadn't seen before, I need to say things and be with people that might feel uncomfortable for me. Well, that's the invitation. The invitation is to take the leap and grow. And so as she does that, she becomes very quiet and she sees, again, things she hadn't seen before. She understands the interconnectedness of all things. And she sees that the orchard helps itself. I mean, this is research-based short story. So this is actually what happens with trees, is there's deep communication that we don't see or we don't hear. And so then she came to understand, wow, this is who I am. This is the universe that I am part of. And so, I think that's the invitation for all of us. And this is what I support in people everywhere, is to take a small step.
I think it's at that crossroads. You know, as you said, you know, we all can feel stuck. Sometimes we can feel bored or feel routine, or we've kind of maxed out on our career. And we're thinking, as you just said, you know, is this it? Is this all of it? You know, a lot of us don't feel like that, but I think that sense of boredom or being stuck or having routine, these are good emotions because it wakens us up to that, you know what? It's time to change the game. Even if we tweak it, doesn't have to be a 180-degree turn, but tweaking it. And then people ask, well, how do I do that? Well, it's curiosity, right? It's starting at the curiosity. But just to challenge you here, Sonia, you know, when someone is at that crossroads, they may be feeling uncertainty, they may be fearing fear, or it could be more neutral, such as boredom or routine. Yes, we can trigger the curiosity. That's easier for us to say, and sometimes, from my experience, a lot harder to do.
Absolutely.
How do you encourage, through your leadership development, teaching at, you know, McGill and Concordia, great universities, you know, to students coming up into the game and even corporate professionals that you work with, how does someone choose the high road, which is the harder road because they got to climb, right? Instead of sticking with the low road, which is just easy and gravity takes you down. What advice would you give to make that choice, to make that leap?
Well, that's a huge question.
Yes, I know.
I told you.
I love huge questions. It's good. And the way I've been experiencing it, so I took the book's message. I created a framework, a growth framework, what I call, and then I created a program that goes with it, and that launched in 2019. So I can say, and I've been collecting data.
Yeah.
That helps answer the question you just asked me. And what I've noticed is that people probably are in two camps. The camp that is just not at that level of awareness, right? So they don't know what they don't know. So and that's fine, and they are just going through their lives and doing the best that they can and enjoying their lives. That's camp number one. Camp number two is the camp I'm talking about, where they have this yearning, or there's this something already. So it's not like somebody has planted it there. It is there for them already. They are asking these questions. And they are the people that have found me, my work, and my programs. And then they say, I want to figure out how to do this. Like, you know, I have no clue what to do next, but I know that I've got something. I've got these questions. I know there's more for me. I just don't know what it is. And you're absolutely right. It doesn't mean I've got to throw away my whole life and start again. However, that's how it feels sometimes. It feels like I don't know what my next step, therefore I have to throw away my whole life and start again. And that is not what needs to be done. In fact, we have to do the opposite. We have to celebrate everything that came before this very moment, because it has made us who we are in this moment. And that is going to take you to the next level. So yes, curiosity, it's easy to say, yeah, just be curious, la-di-da, and all will be fine with the world. But no, that's seriously not all of it, correct? We need to celebrate. And I find mostly people don't. We don't celebrate. We have this potential negative mindset that reviews all of the things that we should have done or could have done or didn't do. And I would say, let's reverse that and celebrate. And in celebrating, we get to embrace who we are as individuals and all of the experiences that have been monumental in producing the human being that you are. So the celebration is important. And I would say the second thing is the community. So you have to find a community that will help you to re-engage with your curiosity, help you to celebrate, help you to understand that you don't have to throw it all away, but you do have to rediscover your path and what you need to do. And there, you know, and it requires reflection. It requires intention. Like you said, it's a climb. Mm-hmm. It's not a fancy stroll in the park. But the climb is worth it. Mm-hmm. And if you have the right people with you, it is not, you know, you can't do it alone exclusively. Mm-hmm. There are, the reflection obviously is individual. No one can do it for you. But the answers are within you. So it's not like you could open up a book and say, I'll find the answers there. You have to work on yourself. It's an inner job. It's an inside job. There we go.
I did not pay her to say that. No, it is. It is. It's the courage to explore. You know, when you said it's we are a collection of experiences. And something I do is I try to help reframe, and what you do and your practices are about reframing. And so someone, when they are at the precipice of some sort of change, you know, something's coming up, they feel like I got to move. I got to do something. And that's usually it's not a light switch. It's something that's slowly grown over time. And then it comes to a head, and then they are challenged with this question, and they can choose. I can continue what I'm doing, the grind and the hustle, and do what I do, because it's safe, it's certain, I know what it is, but it's routine, or I can take a small leap or small step. And it's just there. What I find when someone's at that crossroads, I do a little exercise, gain versus lack. People are always talking about what they lack. They lack a new future, lack a new challenge, lack a new what have you. Then sometimes I say, that's true. That is 100% true. And I know you want to move forward, but you don't know how. And the uncertainty is throwing up a pitfall or a wall in front of you. But what I always say is, let's look at the gain. Look over your shoulder. See from the trailhead of where you began, wherever it's university or college or wherever you want to start, to where you are today. And look at all the trials and the tribulations and the conundrums and the questions you've solved and the problems you've tackled. Nobody can take that away from you. Those are experiences. Those are fact. And you've come through so many other challenges. And before you met that challenge, you were there in uncertainty. But somehow you found the gumption, the courage, and the bravery to push through, even though you had fear in your gut. Here it is again. It's just a different format at a different time. Look at your past self, because that speaks volumes. It's not a predictor of the future, but it can be a sign of how things will go. Because at the end of the day, for you to move into those past challenges, whether you came out, you know, smooth or a little rough, you know, handled roughly, but you came through it, it shaped you. And so those were driven by you, the individual, to find the courage and the bravery, regardless of the fear and the doubt and the uncertainty, and you pass through it. When we look at our past, our experience, that can drive us, to find us the courage to find that curiosity and to act on that curiosity. Sometimes I just call it embracing the struggle, you know? Embrace the struggle, because there is where learning happens.
No, exactly. You absolutely right. And that's absolutely beautiful. I totally love that. Love that exercise. It is so critical. And, you know, we don't do enough of that, what I call reflection and regeneration. That's what it is. You know, when something ends, or when we feel like we don't know what's next, that's what's called for. It's this deep reflection, regeneration to prepare us for the next cycle.
So your leadership developments, your courses and such, you the second thing you talked about was find the curiosity and learn from your experience to move forward. The other one, you talked about community. What is community? And maybe if you could elaborate on that.
Yeah. So community is a beautiful word. I strive for community in all the environments that I live in and play in and work in. It is something that's really core to me and what I need. And if I can't find community, I'm constantly in search of it. So the invitation is find a community that works for you. Whether it's at work or at school, it doesn't matter. It could be your family or friends.
Yeah.
It has to be a community that you can feel supported with. So as part of my program, when we start working together, my invitation is bring five people along with you on the journey, up to five people. Not everybody has five people, but bring at least five, up to five people with you on the journey. And that is community. Mm-hmm. Who can I talk to about this? Who can help listen and reflect back what I'm going through or what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Now, the beauty of this is that I've amalgamated a lot of people that mm-hmm. have taken the program. And so my Take the Leap program, I named it after the Ken Blanchard quote, which he says, take the leap. So I thought, okay, Take the Leap program has what I've called, once you've done one, is a leapster. You're a leapster. So we have a community of leapsters that meet regularly. We've got a Facebook group community that has grown, and we help each other out.
Yeah.
We come together monthly and we support each other. We help ourselves stay accountable to the things that are important to us. And this community for me is a real joy. It was birthed by accident. And it has been, 4 years of leapsters just coming together and supporting each other. We just had our monthly session yesterday, so I'm still feeling it. So so I'm not saying you got to join my community, but community is important because we are so connected as per our conversation. We are interconnected. We need each other to help us find meaning and purpose. And without community, it's a harder climb, I gotta say. And the community just keeps us honest, keeps us focused, keeps us on our path, and re-energizes us along the way.
Organizations themselves are communities in another definition. In The Apple in the Orchard, you talk about emphasizing collaboration and purpose and trust. If we just shift to organizations, now, how can leaders or managers themselves create environments that foster this collaboration, communication, this psychological safety, this among team members?
Right. There's lots of beautiful things that can be done. I think what happens is we have objectives, we have metrics, we have things we have to do, and they obviously take precedence. However, we have to create the conditions for life to grow. So if we're thinking about an orchard or a garden, or doesn't matter, if we don't cultivate the conditions for life to grow, then it won't. Or it might not be as good as it could be, right? So before we start with the goals and the tasks and the milestones and the metrics and all of this, we really do have to create these conditions. And so what I love to do is I love to bring in the conversation about purpose. So I often ask leaders, have you asked your employees what their purpose is? And they look at me like a little strangely, why would I do that? but every organization has a purpose. It's standard for organizations to create visions and mission statements. Not all, but certain teams have mission statements and vision statements that align to the organizational statement. So it would seem logical that then the employee coming in who is fulfilling these team and organizational visions and purpose, that they too have their own purpose. But it feels like a foreign thing to do. So that's one of my things that I'm trying to support leaders to do, is to help connect with their people to say, well, what is your purpose? And really be curious about it. And they probably don't have an answer for you, but I think that's the opportunity, is how can we cultivate the purpose of our employees and find the alignment to what we do every day, so that there's spark, there's engagement, there's life that we're cultivating in the individual, so that we can reach the objectives of the organization.
And I think purpose is aligned with things like passions. You know, sometimes it could be as simple as a leader asking in a one-to-one where it's just them and their direct report, you know, what lights your fire? What part of your job that actually gives you a sense of passion, you know? And once you start talking about that, you can see a shift in the networks of a person's brain, right? Because they start engaging in something they really like talking about. And just starting down that road, a simple question like that can become a full-blown conversation. And it can take up an entire one-to-one, whatever, 30 minutes, right? And you can talk about this. And it's not that the leader, I completely concur with what you're saying, Sonia, because the leader doesn't always, he or she doesn't have to come up, okay, how do I trigger their passion? No, go to the well to draw the water. You know, you don't have to put the hydrogen and oxygen together yourself. There's a well. Talk to them. What lights their fire? And to see what can link it to the purpose. And yes, it is individual. And I also find that sometimes if the manager or leader can, because people can have very specific niche roles and they do their work and they do it with pride or what have you. But what's sometimes lacking is they don't see how their contributions has the end result for the company. And if a manager or leader can somehow link that and show that in very concrete, tangible terms, that can be also another way. I think that comes back to what your such a salient point. What is their purpose, right?
Oh, that's super powerful. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's really not complicated. It is not complicated to ask these questions. And the mm-hmm. questions are powerful mm-hmm. because they will light the spark in the individual, right? Mm-hmm. And making the connections for them to say, you know, you're doing this every day. You're in a very exclusive specialty role, but here's the outcome for you out there within the organization and with the world, making those connections and helping them ask, even just asking that question, how do you think your role supports the organization and supports the people who use whatever said product or service? And I call it really the four P's. So if you ask questions around the four P's, you're okay. We talked about two of them, which is purpose and passion. Mm-hmm. But then there's also principles. What are your guiding principles? And then what are your powers? What are your strengths? And so those four areas are the foundation of engagement, of clarity. And if we can help each other at the individual level achieve these four P's, which we don't. If we could do that, I could just, it's just, I'm getting goosebumps because it could be just such an amazing experience that we can create for our communities and our organizations. And, you know, I just read the other day in 2023 that the top initiative for HR professionals and leaders is engagement, employee engagement. So it feels like there's a lot of opportunity out there for us to re-engage our employees. And I think that there are good answers to it. And I think purpose is at the heart. And I mean, I'm seeing, you know, it is my field of research and work. I'm seeing it everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, there are now full-blown conferences on purpose. It feels like the conversation is here, like you said. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just because that's what I'm that's what I'm focusing on. I don't know if the average person sees it, but I'm feeling it very strongly. And I think that's the opportunity.
And I think, as you said, you know, it's so easy for managers and leaders or any of us to talk about the quantitative measures or metrics. How is it going with the project? Where are you in the assignment? Do you have enough resources? Bang, bang. I mean, those are important and critical conversations to have to make sure things are moving forward because of KPIs, key performance indicators, what have you. And that is important. So I don't want to minimize that. But what I hear you also saying, it's we need to balance those conversations with a qualitative. We as leaders or managers or coaches or whatever we want to call ourselves, we need to have the courage to have these conversations. Yes, they're a little messier. Yes, they don't have such sharp, nice edges to it, but that purpose, passion, and you said guiding principles and the power, my strengths, that is where we can engage, because what I hear is what you're saying is, you know, engagement is the hot topic right now. And but engagement itself is the garden. But as you said, you need to create the fertile soil or have the elements such as those four P's, or psychological safety, maybe a fifth P, I don't know. But I mean, if you have that, if you have that environment where people feel safe, feel connected, and feel valued, and see how their contributions have meaning and their opinions and ideas are also valued, they may not always float. Some of them will sink, of course, you know, but if they can see the overall contributions to how it contributes to the team, the company, the department, what have you, then I think that creates part of the fertile soil in which, if we can use your analogy, the apple tree can grow or the orchard can flourish. Is that what I understand you're communicating?
You got it. You got it. That's beautifully explained. Love it, actually. Yeah, I think, you know, you said something really important. You've said a lot of important things, but just now you said, if someone can feel valued, right? And my conversations recently have been around that. If we cannot see the value that we put into things, we say to ourselves, well, if I weren't here tomorrow, nobody would care and nothing would change. So what's my purpose here? Why am I here? And if you have your employees asking these questions, that's not good, because then they disengage. And, you know, they might stay but not be present. That's worse than if they were to leave. And we don't want that. So helping them see their value, helping them see their contribution, is something that feels maybe daunting. You know, how do I do that on a regular basis? But the goal is not for you as a leader to do this. It's to cultivate the environment, coming back to community, where we are all helping each other do this. So it's not, the onus is not on one individual to create the psychological safety. It's the community. And if your belief is in this, then communicating this belief and demonstrating, being a role model for it, is really your role. And then the community itself will take it on. And there is nobody that, I mean, every time I ask a question about passion, like you said, what are your passions? Or what's the thing that really brings energy to your life, to your world?
Yeah.
The person lights up, right? We can see flourishing right in front of us. The person just comes to life. And so those are triggers. Wow, this is bringing this person to life. And it has nothing to do with the work we do every day. That's okay. Let me understand the person and what lights them up. Bring them to the place where, yes, your job also connects to this. And this is what I see. These are the conversations. It's really about the conversation.
It is about the conversation. And sometimes you can increase that conversation. You know, emotions are very infectious, you know, negative or positive emotions, whatever you want to call it. But if you sitting in a room, as you said, community, let's say it's the team. And at the end of the month, we talk about, you know, just a half an hour, whatever, a coffee and such, just to reconnect after a crazy month and talk about what really lit our fire, what really kindled us or rekindled us in the last month. All of a sudden, everyone is framed around the optimistic, passionate. It may have been a tough, hard month. In any way you cut it, was hard and tough. But what lit the fire, how they contributed to the greater good, how they helped each other, how there was maybe altruistic behavior or what have you. And if you have a conversation around that for 20, 30 minutes, maybe an hour, and it's 1 hour in a month, right? And you have this talk that, for me, from my experiences, that stays with people for a long time, not just through the weekend. You know, it can stick with that and create those connective tissue or the bonds. At least that's from my experience. I was wondering, what is your experience around those kind of conversations?
Yeah. So when I work with teams in particular, so there's a team that I'm working with currently where, because of pandemic, they don't go into office. They don't see each other as much. They tried, you know, the Teams or online get-togethers, just not the same, right? So they kicked off in the fall with a retreat, you know, a one-day event, and brought the entire team together. I think there were about 30 or 35 people. And the spark, the energy. And we didn't talk about work. We talked about ourselves, you know. We talked about this, what you and I are talking about, right? What are your passions? Who are you? Why are you here? Why is this important to you? And then that kicked off. I was like, well, we can't have this one event and be like so great and then do nothing. So we installed monthly meetings, and I attended the first few. And, you know, if you think about monthly meetings, again, the senior leader was focused on, okay, here's, you know, here are the tasks, here are our objectives, here's what we're doing. And I said to her, I challenged her and I said, well, could you communicate this in an email? And she says, I probably could. I said, okay, well, do they need to hear it from you? Maybe. Maybe there's a few things that are important that they need it to hear from you. But, could, you know, do you need to fill an hour and a half of you just talking about stuff that they could read? The important thing is that they're doing most of the talking during these meetings, right? So we just created a series of exercises where they would get into small groups and discuss and then share back. And then that would spark other things. And then they would get into other small groups and discuss and spark. Now, in this case, we were talking about work. You know, we were talking about work, but we were talking about your perspective on the work, not the leader's perspective on the work. And I said to her, okay, I think this is the pattern. You can continue with these things, right? And she says, I don't know if I could do this. I said, yes, you can. You can do it, because all you have to do is come up with some really smart, interesting questions, which you can do, and have them do all the talking. And they loved it, right? And it created this fertile condition for them to continue their community. And they meet in person now once a month to come together as a community, as a team, to talk about the things that are important in their job.
In part one, Sonia reminds us that as social beings, we are interconnected and that working together is essential. Even small connections with others can lead to remarkable positive changes, and it's crucial for us to acknowledge the potential within ourselves and those around us. But how can we move away from a mindset of competition and embrace genuine connection? And as Sonia points out so candidly, it's by recognizing that we are not just isolated individuals. What is required of us is that we must shift our focus to our inherent potential and to cultivate our own curiosity. Sonia encourages us to be present in our surroundings, grounding ourselves in the now, in the here and now, and taking the leap into curiosity, even when faced with uncertainty. You know, throughout our lives, some people may be aware simply going through the motions, while others, they yearn for change, but struggle to find their way. Sonia highlights the importance of appreciating our experiences and shifting our mindset from negativity to exploration. To support the transformative journey, she has created the Take a Leap program, a community that fosters growth, accountability, and intention. Now, in fostering collaboration within organizations, leaders play a vital role. By establishing what Sonia calls the four P's, purpose, passion, principles, and powers, leaders can foster an environment where they empower employees to recognize their own value and contribute their unique strengths by creating that environment of psychological safety. You know, true leaders become role models, igniting the passions of their team members and encourage them to explore to their full potentials. Now, as we continue our conversation with Sonia in part two, we will delve deeper into the insights shared in her book, The Apple in the Orchard. Together, we will explore how these teachings can guide us in fostering collaboration, personal growth, and organizational success. So let us now slip back into the stream for part two with Sonia DiMalla. How important is a one-to-one meeting between the manager and his or her direct report? And How should that be connected to, you know, the philosophy and the work that you do? How important is a one-to-one?
It's extremely important. And so as the team itself and the leadership of that team, you need structures that spark conversations, mm-hmm. right? So you might have a one-year event, right, that brings people together, that reviews and celebrates what we've accomplished and then plans for the future. That is pretty standard. I create communication strategies for leaders. And so based on the environment, the organization, the needs, et cetera, there are different things that you could do, right? So the team meetings, you were talking about them. I gave you an example. These are important, right? Maybe it's 1 hour once a month or an hour and a half once a month. Team meetings, check. What sometimes I advise is listening meetings. So maybe it's a 15-minute, maybe it's a team meeting, maybe it's a one-on-one meeting where your role is just to listen. And that is powerful because you are letting them know, I value what you're saying and I want to hear you say it. So that's one form of a one-on-one, can just be a listening meeting. But having a consistent, regular one-on-one with your people demonstrates that you care to hear about their own personal journey along their work life. Now, the thing that I see sometimes happen is these things get canceled, right? So it's like, when's the last time you had your last one-on-one? Well, it was canceled. When are you having your next one? I'm not sure, right? So if it gets canceled regularly, then the message is, I'm too busy to have to find out about how you're doing on a personal level. So the one-on-ones, I think, are critical. How they work, well, that's up to you, right? Like if you have 100 employees, well, that'll be difficult, right?
Definitely.
It has to be crafted very, very, you need a strategy, right? A carefully crafted strategy for how you're going to pull this off, because it's about being consistent, present, and not canceling. So how can I set this up for myself that I can stay consistent with it?
Now, I think, you know, if there is a culture of canceling the one-to-ones, that also, I think, communicates that maybe these meetings aren't important. They're just something it's nice to do, but you know, we've got more serious things to happen to do, right? And so one-to-ones for me have always been a very important, because, you know, even as functional and as high performing as the team may be, and they may all be great communicators and have the best relationships, there's always going to be some topic that's too sensitive to bring up around the table. And the only time to table that is a one-to-one with his or her manager, right? To work things through. So people are thinking, okay, one-to-ones, because also I see with one-to-ones, what happens is after a time, it goes back down to default of just talking about the quantitative, you know, the metrics and the measures, the KPIs, right? And as I said, again, I don't want to demean that. I think that's important, but it can't just be about that. It can be about these four P's that you're talking about. So if a manager and a leader is thinking, let's say someone who's, this is a whole new concept for them. They're coming out of school and they're coming into the game and they're thinking, okay, I've got my first leadership role. I understand the concept of a one-to-one, but, and I've got, let's say, 8 direct reports. They are thinking, okay, how long should each of these be? How often should I have them? And what are some of the subjects I should talk about? I think we've talked about some of the subjects, but if you looked at sort of, I know it can be very situational, but from your experience, Sonia, what do you find that works the best when it comes to timing and how often they should have it?
Well, it's a hard question to answer. And my advice always is find out from the people that you lead. They will tell you, right? We don't want to create more meetings than we need to, right? We have enough meeting. But the one-on-ones, they're meant to help the employee. So if they're not helping the employee and you're sitting somewhere creating a strategy for one-on-ones and you don't know what they want or what they need, then there's a disconnect because you can come up with a beautiful strategy works for you, but it might not do the things it's supposed to do. So, you know, you could do a couple of things. You could survey so that it's anonymous if they want to keep their, you know, opinion anonymous, and that's important. So it could be a survey where you're asking some generic questions, and then you can have a full meeting. If you've got eight, right, like you could do that in one meeting and say, here, you know, here's what I'm producing. I want to create one-on-one structure to meet with you to find out what's important to you, to see, to let you know what I'm seeing and to show you the value, right? That all the things we've talked about today, and then get the information from them. Like, do we want to meet once a week? Do we want to meet twice a month? Do we want to meet monthly? How do we want to do it? Is 15 minutes enough? Maybe half an hour is enough. I don't know, right? Like it's really hard to come up with like a standard because it depends on the people, what their needs are. And if we've never done them before and this is new, the beginning, you might need more time. And then eventually it might change, right? The intention is if you've created fertile conditions for life to grow and thrive, then you might not need as much time. It might be just easier over time. So it does need to adapt and change as the team and community adapts and changes.
Yeah. And so as I hear what you're saying is that one-to-ones will differ from one situation to the next situation, depending on company, personality, person, if they're more independent or they're more dependent. What I hear, what's important is that you need to talk about the qualitative. That needs to be breached. It doesn't have to be every single time, but to talk about the purpose, the passion, about guiding principles and a person's strength, their powers, right? And that establishes the sort of the fertile ground for a team to prosper. Is that what I understand? Like the orchard.
Absolutely. Like I've met with a couple of leaders and I say, okay. And she says, okay, well, I'm having my one-to-one tomorrow. So let's meet the day after. Perfect. Mm-hmm. We meet. And I say, okay, so what'd you talk about? We talked about metrics and goals and KPIs and tasks and what I'm doing next, you know? And I said, well, how, you know, was that helpful? It was helpful.
But
there's always this, could there be something more to these meetings than just status reports?
And I think it comes back down to the top of our conversation. You know, when we get stuck, right? That's when we need to tweak things, whether it's our career, a hobby, our interests, or whatever aspect of life. It comes back down to the one-to-ones. It's just a microcosm of the bigger question we're asking. But sometimes when things come down, it just seems like a grind. We're just doing this for the sake of doing it. Well, then maybe you need to retool and repurpose what the one-to-ones are. And I find it's also a great place for managers to ask for feedback about how they are supporting their people. Because a lot of the times they think, oh, it's a one-to-one, I'm here to support the people. Yes, a majority of the time. But it's also a great forum in which you can give feedback where they will feel a little safer, not in front of everybody, to give you direct feedback of how you're supporting them, what they need more of or less of from you, or what you can improve to help them, right? So it's a two-way conversation. So I think for me, it's integral what you're saying. It's the connective tissue that holds a team together.
Yeah, I mean, the leader needs to be vulnerable to ask for feedback. So there has to be that openness to be willing to hear what is being said. Because you might think, I'm doing a great job. I'm doing one-on-ones, check. But maybe it's not doing what it needs to do. And you might hear things that might just impact you, right? But that's the opportunity. So if we look at it as opportunity, then I think it's good. But you do have to have a thicker skin in implementing some of the stuff that we're talking about. And the other thing I'd like to add, this is really important, is if you're not a leader and you're an employee in these meetings and you're questioning why you're having them and it's just a status check, then it's really up to you as well to learn about your leader. Maybe you can ask the questions about passion and purpose and strengths. And, you know, it doesn't have to be all, the onus doesn't have to be on the leader. And, you know, get to know your leader on a different scale other than business as usual. And that might trigger something in the leader as well. And that is also a leap, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Like me asking my leader about the things that are important to me And so that might be scary, but it could also be wonderful. And you don't know unless you try.
And I think it's just that, you know, instead of the employee sometimes thinking, okay, when is he or she going to change this up? And as you said, so to the point, you need to take onus. You need to take ownership. You will not need, but you will want to take ownership. And it's okay for you to bring up that things. Like, I'd like to change up the one-to-ones and just call it for what it is. I'm not getting a lot out of this. And we can do this status check over coffee. I'd really like to get more of one-on-one time because I know your time as my leader is very precious because you've got whatever, so many other direct reports and plus everything else you're responsible for. So I'd really like to maximize and get dividends out of the investment we put into these one-to-ones. And so I completely agree. Sometimes it's just finding the courage, as difficult as that may be, just to say something. I mean, you can be direct, but you can be diplomatic about it. You can be fair, but firm, right?
Yeah.
If I can just challenge you, if we shift it, so we've been talking about a team and sometimes working within a team, the dynamics are a little easier, not always easy, but a little easier to work with to create that connective tissue and that sort of collaboration. So if you have a company that is under the gun, they have financial pressures or market pressures, and it's really bootstrapped kind of thinking. And you have two teams. They need to work together, but you start seeing the silo mentality sort of growing. And, you know, your book speaks so eloquently about collective intelligence, about collaboration and cohesiveness. From your experience, Sonia, you know, nuts and bolts, you have two teams that should be working together, but they are so siloed. They see them versus us. How do you breach that? How do you build bridges instead of this, all these burning of bridges?
Well, you just described an actual situation that I supported in my past.
Okay.
So I had an organization approach me with this very same challenge.
Mm.
Two teams, these were sales teams, two sales teams that worked the same market, but with different products. So if you could just imagine, right, we are calling on the same customer from the same company, but we're servicing them differently.
Okay.
So you would imagine the collaboration needs to be really, really tight.
Mm.
I need to know when you last met with this client so that I'm not, you know, so that we're a synchronized swimming kind of approach as opposed to bombarding this person every day. So we really do need to work together. We need to communicate, over-communicate, collaborate, work together. But what was happening was it was competition instead, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was like more like, I'm going to do my thing, you're going to do your thing, and we're just going to see who's going to win. So coming in with the leadership, my role was to work with the leaders and the team. And the first thing I did was, well, the leaders, fine, we got to work with them, but I want to work with the leaders' leaders too.
Hmm.
So that's the first thing that we did. And that in fact was wonderful because the leaders' leaders, so the national leader,
mm-hmm,
was also involved in the conversations, and they realized, hey, I need to be closer to the teams. So there was a divide. And then this one individual, he just made it a point to connect with one of the employees on the team every day. So if you can just imagine that employee getting a call from, you know, the higher up, that's pretty powerful. And the conversation was, how are you?
Mm.
You know, it was, yeah, there was some work-related talk for sure, but it was really like, I'm reaching out to you because I want to understand, you know, who you are and what you're doing. And that sparked huge change. And then I worked with the leaders themselves to help them. And I don't know anything about the business. It really was about, who are we as individuals? What are our guiding principles? What are our powers, our strengths? What are our passions? What are our purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Is about reconnecting with each other as human beings. Really, that's what we did in 1 year. And I did team meetings with, mm-hmm, the two teams together. And what we did, we learned about each other as human beings. And so what happens is like, oh, so-and-so has a family. He has two kids. He's a dog and a cat. And he loves this. And this is what his passion is. And this is what he strives for. And this is his, you know, this is what he wants to do with his life. Wow, he's a real person with real feelings and real emotions. And that really was the bridge to help these two teams work better together. And after 1 year of working with them and that whole system, I asked them, you know, what were the most important things that you've come out of this experience with? And interestingly, it was about relationships. I now have a relationship with my daughter. You know, so the work we did together spread out into the connected community of my life, my family, my friends, and with my team. So, you know, this one gentleman was able to retain his employees because he now approached them as human beings and not as human doings. And it revolutionized, you know, how they did their work. So we connected. That was the strategy. Let's reconnect with each other as people.
And again, what you're saying has parallels to the book, because, you know, what's picturing my head is, you know, you have two trees, you know, these two sales teams are two separate trees looking at each other across the orchard. And that's the position. You sit in that part of the orchard. We sit this part of the orchard. But as the camera goes down below the earth, you can see the interconnected roots. And those roots are understanding that we have shared values, that we have shared principles, that we have shared passions. And one of the things that I do and that has so much overlap with what your philosophy is just that. When I see us versus them, it's when people or groups start seeing themselves as interdependent of the others. We don't need you. This is our client. This is our contract. This is our whatever, territory, land, or what have you. But once you infuse the question of, how are you dependent upon each other? What is the collective goal? What are you trying to achieve together? And again, it comes back down to the four P's, but at a bigger level of purpose, passion, principles and powers. Then all of a sudden, you move from this positional and you go down to the roots and you see how actually we're interconnected. Because once people start talking about how they're dependent upon each other to achieve something, what does that trigger? That triggers something called the empathy network. And all of a sudden, we start relating to each other. We start connecting to each other at a different level than just whatever. This is the product you're selling. This is the product we're selling. We have the same customer. Is that what I understand you're saying? Because that's the connections I'm making.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we did create a combined set of guiding principles. So what are the principles that we all share, that we all value? And what are our needs? We talked about our needs, you know, so if I need this, and this is our shared value, let's say our shared value is respect. Oh, you value respect? Oh, I value respect. Mm. Oh, really? Oh, because I thought you didn't. Yeah. Right. So when we come together on that, then I can understand that, wow, maybe I can help you. Maybe you can help me. Because we actually indeed need each other. Because if I go see my client and my client's like, well, one of your people was here yesterday, they don't know what the difference is between you and the other person, then that's going to hurt all of us. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's where we landed. Like, let's zoom out. Let's look at the big picture as opposed to just focusing on my task and what I need. Let's focus on the bigger picture so that we can all flourish and thrive together and be productive as a unit.
You know, I had an earlier guest on. This was in season two or something a while back. Jill Bolte Taylor. She's a neuroscience from out of Indiana, and she talks about the left and right hemispheres of the brain. How we have two emotional centers, two logical centers, and basically what you're doing through your programs and through your leadership development, or just having these conversations with these different departments, is that you're moving from a left hemisphere, which is very, as we've talked about at the top of this conversation, Sonia, it's very. It looks at the granular, it sees the differences between things. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what that side of the brain does. It categorizes and organizes and prioritizes. But what I hear you do through your facilitation is that you shift the conversation to more sort of right hemisphere. Again, that's logical and emotional, but it is wired to see the connectiveness between things, to see the global picture, and to see that we are two different departments, but we're actually part of the same company. We share the same passion, purpose, guiding principles, and we have similar powers because we're both sales groups in that particular group. And so what I actually see, I used to work with trauma, and part of that was actually shifting hemispheres into people to think and they have two emotional centers and two logical centers and tapping into that to create this bigger picture. And so I know this is not something you talk about so much, but I see a lot of what you're doing, how it has impact in different layers. And I just find it quite profound and quite fascinating, actually, what you're speaking to, because you bring it down to a very pragmatic, nuts and bolts way of getting people to interact. And I think at the end of the day, that's what we need. It's not all the theories, but it's the pragmatics and the practicalities of things, right? And so that's why what you're saying really resonates with me. I really like that sort of hands-on approach.
Well, I like that you said it's practical. It is, but I'm learning from you now, right? About this, the left and the right brain and how maybe I did it, you know, without intention, but that's exactly what I did, what I do. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, my number one superpower is perspective.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So this is the VIA character strengths. I don't know if you've ever heard of the VIA character strengths.
No. Maybe no. You can operate on
that. Yeah, it's a free online tool. We all have 24 character strengths. Mm-hmm. And we take this assessment there are categories, but it organizes it in terms of our top signature strengths, which are our top five. So after you do the survey, you get your 24 in order.
Okay.
And the character strengths, my number one is perspective, which is exactly what you just said about the zoom out, you know, seeing the big picture. Mm-hmm. And if we bring that over to the right hemisphere, we are able to then make these connections that I've been mm-hmm. talking about. So it is aligned to me, what you're saying. It is my superpower and I use it. And so I'm making all these connections now, which is wonderful. And it's how I see the world. And I help other people see the world in that way. And it's not the solution for everything, but in some cases it is. And when there's openness to exploring and to zooming out and to connecting, then it really does do a lot of good things.
There's two major things that your book talks about, you know, when we're talking about this connectedness and the bigger perspective. We've talked a lot about well-being on teams and organizations and individuals through one-to-ones and through group meetings once a month and such, different aspects we've already touched base on. When it comes to the second part, which I also find equally fascinating, is resilience. You know, maybe what is resilience for you and how do you see that show up in organizations? I know that's a big general question, but mm-hmm. interpret it the way you wish.
Absolutely. So, you know, when I started my research in 2020, mm-hmm. resilience was one of the things we were measuring. And we were studying. We have subsequently removed it, and I'll explain a little bit why. Mm-hmm. So, you know, resilience, if I look at the book in a way, Brave Apple, the way I've described the story is a story about finding the courage to emerge. So the courage to emerge is linked to the resilience of persevering towards this goal, towards this, you know, maybe it's not even a goal you know you have, but there's mm-hmm. resilience in overcoming challenges and hurdles and all of these things in order to persevere and then learn and grow, right? Mm-hmm. And it felt like a big thing, this resilience. And then during pandemic, everybody's talking about being resilient and, the onus is on you to be resilient, even though you've got all these challenges ahead of you. So we moved it into clarity instead of resilience, because resilience, we wanted to move away from it being an individual responsibility of resilience mm-hmm. to a collective opportunity of resilience. So how can we be resilient as a collective? How can we see the challenges, mm-hmm. hold them, ground ourselves in who we are so that we can overcome and find solutions to these challenges. And one of the quotes I often use is, a strong tree laughs at storms, or a grounded tree laughs at storms. It's a Malay proverb. And so I see us collectively helping us be grounded so that when the storm comes, we can be resilient as a collective and laugh at the storms. Because guess what? These storms are coming. They're coming faster and faster. We're seeing this globally. The changes are coming faster and faster. And yes, we must be resilient. We must find strategies to help us not just cope, but to transform and continue to add life to our world.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's for the individual that could be skilling and reskilling, you know, upskilling their sets. As again, at the top of our conversation, sometimes you're on the precipice of making a choice. You're at that crossroads. And it's that curiosity. As you said, it's about finding community. And it's finding kind of learning from your own experiences when which you can draw from your past. Again, your past is not a predictor of the future, but it can help you to see how you've overcome other adversities, how you've solved other conundrums and answered some questions. As we talked about, those are facts. No one can strip them from you. And so it's both of those. Well, Sonia, you've been very generous with your time. I was just wondering, is there any last advice or is it, if I may ask for a few more minutes of your time, can you Absolutely. Speak about your program and your leadership? I know you have something coming up, just a timestamp. This recording is in June, and so 2023. But maybe you could speak maybe to some of your programs, because I think this is something that many of my listeners may be interested in, or they may know someone who might be interested in.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So I have Purpose Labs that I run throughout the year. Mm-hmm. They are free. They're open to everybody who's curious and wants to join. This Purpose Lab, we're focusing on the four P's. So we're going to go through that methodology and really give you the tools and help you figure that out for yourself. So the Free Purpose Lab is happening on June 22nd, and there's four time zones available. So it doesn't matter where you live. There's probably a time zone that might work for you. And that's a global invitation to anybody who wants to join us. And then on July 5th, I'm launching a Take the Leap program for professionals. So exclusively for senior leaders or executives or even founders who feel they have potential to do more. And they would like to take their potential to the next level to really highlight and bring clarity to their path and to their future. And then that launches on the 5th of July for 6 weeks. So it's a 6 week program that leads into an accountability program. So creating the plan is lovely and fine and beautiful, but if we do nothing with it, then nothing happens. So the accountability program comes with as a bonus.
Well said. Will you send me all the links and I can include all that in the show notes for any listeners who will be interested or who might be interested?
Absolutely, I will.
Great, Sonia. Back to my original question before I explored this on your programs. Is there any last tips, advice, or suggestions you could leave with our listeners that we haven't breached in our conversation today?
Oh, that we haven't breached. Oh, that's interesting. Well, the thing that came to me really was maybe as a summary, more sure. as a summary of what we talked about, because that's what's coming up is really important for me right now, is to celebrate every day. So it could be just a moment of clarity or awareness to say, what should I give thanks for? What should I be grateful for in terms of today? And to be curious about yourself, your emotions, what they're telling you, and the people around you, and how you impact them and how they impact you. So these are big things, but if we could do them on a regular basis, I know for me that those are my practices. Those are my daily practices, and they help me be grounded and feel stronger as an individual and as a collective.
Well, Sonia, thank you very much for your time, sharing your expertise, your passions, and the lessons you've learned along your professional road. So I really appreciate it.
It was a total joy. I loved speaking with you today.
Thanks, Sonia.
Thank you.
Well, folks, that was the awesome Sonia DiMallo. She is the author of The Apple in the Orchard, a great book, a very short read, but quite profound in its message. And sometimes we don't need a long, voluminous book to understand the impact of certain philosophies, of certain ways of thinking that can help us to create more well-being and to strengthen our own resilience. So a big thank you personally from me to you, Sonia, for taking the time. I appreciate it. I know you're very, very busy. Well, folks, as Sonia said, she has her courses open. It's coming up now at the end of June and the beginning of July. So I will links and information in the show notes. You will also find a direct link to her great little book. Well, folks, that brings us to the tail end of another episode and another week. I appreciate you showing up and allowing me to be part of that week. And if you find you are in that mood to share some feedback with me, to share a comment, or just have a general inquiry or an ask, please reach out to me. I am always open to hearing from you. Well, I will leave you now to get on with the rest of your week. And until the next time we meet and continue this conversation about well-being and resilience, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.